Welcome to the Out of Space podcast, hosted by me, Kathy Lomax, featuring artists from Across Spaces Studios in conversation with writers, critics and art professionals, offering a closer look into what happens behind closed studio doors. Over the next 8 episodes, we will be exploring the theme of care from multiple viewpoints, ranging from artists and parenthood to caring about the community and about the work itself. This series was recorded remotely in order to adhere to social distancing rules, and there may be variations in sound quality. Out of Space, a podcast by Space Studios. Hello, this episode of Out of Space's Care series focuses on art and caring. That is how to combine them and the impact that one has upon the other. A carer is defined as a family member or paid helper who regularly looks after a child or a sick, elderly or disabled person. We're going to focus on caring for children and in particular how having and caring for children shapes art making and the development of an art career. To discuss this, I'm delighted to welcome two guests who are both artist parents, Catherine Tuller and Emily Speed. Hello.
Hello. Hi.
Catherine Tuller is a painter and experimental filmmaker who lives and works in East London. She's two daughters, aged 10 and 19, and a husband, aged 54, very importantly. To fund her practice, she teaches art to children and runs workshops in schools. Recent projects have included a lockdown exhibition with Felicitas Arga, which was inspired by Bavarian folk tales and held in an online space. And in 2020, her project Interior Day was based on images from the film Natalia Granger. Yeah. Where two women hang around the house together with their kids, which was accompanied by a pamphlet by her sister on Marguerite Duras's cooking. That sounds amazing. Can't wait to talk about those things. Yeah. and Emily Speed. Emily Speed is an artist, educator, coach and advocate for artists' rights based in the Northwest. Her practice spans drawing, sculpture, installation, photography, moving image and performance, and it explores the relationship between architecture and the human body. Speed has shown her work at Yorkshire Sculpture Park, Tate St Ives, Lormier Sculpture Park in St Louis, and Fort Worth Contemporary Art, among others. She's currently making a new work for Tate Liverpool, which will open in September 2021. Which sounds really exciting, and I can't wait to hear about that. So I want to dive straight in by addressing what kind of seems like it could be a kind of elephant in the room, which is, of course, Cyril Connolly's much-quoted statement from his 1938 book Enemies of Promise, which almost inevitably accompanies any discussion about artists and children. And it is... There is no more sombre enemy of good art than the pram in the hallway. End of quote. So with that out of the way, and maybe that's something that we can
swap that in with Tracy Emin recently said, well, I don't know if she recently said, there are good artists who have children, they are called men. Which my immediate thought was, oh.
That's a good one. Oh,
yeah,
brutal.
I think it's just very annoying.
Yes. So let's start by thinking about where you were in your career when you had children and what impact it had upon you as an artist. So maybe I could ask Emily first.
Yeah, sure.
To let us know about that.
Yeah, okay. So... So it's interesting, I've not heard that quote for ages, and it's something that sort of was around a lot, but I think what I would say about that is that I didn't want it to be true, and I resisted it, and I put everything in place I could to kind of think that I would be different, but actually having a child did have a big impact, and it did change things.
In a negative way, or it made things harder, maybe is a better way to say it.
Yeah, I'm going to think in the way that anyone with any caring responsibilities would have less access. It does those things. And then it changes your life, of course, because, you know, kids are amazing and difficult. And all those things, but your priorities maybe shift a little bit, and where you're working and how you're working shifts as well. So yeah, even though I resisted it and tried to pretend nothing was going to change, you know, I had to kind of deal with a lot of maybe my own internalised prejudice around what I meant to have kids and how that would be. But yeah, I'd been working for at least 15 years when I had my child, so I did have the benefit of a bit of work behind me.
Yeah, so you were fairly well established.
Yeah, I mean, whatever that means.
Yes,
you know, there's, yeah, but I wasn't emerging or anything like that, for sure. Yeah.
So yeah, can I ask you, Catherine, the same thing?
Well, when I went to art school, I went to art school after I went to university. So actually, I had already had my daughter. It was very difficult, you know, and I always felt that.
And how old was she?
One year old. So it was quite, you know, and I did share responsibility with my husband. But, you know, obviously he works for money. And, you know, sometimes that has to take priority because you've got to pay your bills and things. So I think sometimes also. You have this idea that it's always a negative, that's the, you know, the kind of mantra of things, is that having children, you've got less time, it's always going to be something that impacts on your work. And there have been times where I felt that I had no time to do anything and that I'd never be able to kind of progress. But I have to say, I think that if you can make it so that you're not always absorbing the negative kind of idea that children are a kind of blot, then it works better.
Maybe the big difference here is that that Emily had already been working as an artist.
Yeah.
You'd already been working as an artist, so it came as a kind of big break, you know,
yeah.
A big divide between before and after. I've got sort of. Full disclaimer, I've got two children as well who are in their 20s now. And I didn't go to art college. Let me just think. When I was at art college, I'd already had my first child. He was two, I think. And I was pregnant with my second child when I started at art college. So I was actually pregnant at art college. So I think I'm in a similar situation to Catherine, maybe in that that was just how it was, and I always had to think about fitting it in with the childcare, or you know, combining themes of looking after children with making art. I guess when they were very young, so it's kind of quite a different way of doing it. But I'm really interested, Emily, to know. If having children changed the type of art you were making?
I mean, I guess I would say not really, although I think it's taken me some time to kind of get to grips with it all. And I think, like I said, I tried to carry on as things were. So I had lots of projects in the pipeline and just carried on doing those. And the work I'm making at the moment for Tate, I would say that is something that I would have made before. But I have just got a Develop Your Creative Practice grant, which is quite a big shift. And I think that's been a long time coming in terms of trying to work more locally, trying to work more slowly, and trying to work in a way that isn't totally reliant on like a gallery output or a commission. So, yes, it has, but it's just taken me a really long time to kind of figure that out.
Is that an Arts Council grant, the one you just mentioned?
Yeah, it's the last round of DYCP.
What does it mean? What will that mean for you? What will you be doing with that?
I'm going to go and learn to build with Cob. I'm going to Cob. So it's like mud, clay,
like
straw.
Is that like the straw bale house idea thing?
Yeah.
Sounds amazing.
Exactly. And like line renders and stuff like that, which is something I've always kind of dabbled in around the work, but it's not the thing that people have wanted to fund.
Yeah.
So it's always had a back foot. And carrying on making sort of architectural ceramics and tiles, which is something that has been in the work, but it, you know, and just kind of a bit more woodwork and then a bit of time, imagine. So some time with other people to just do a bit of planning. and a bit of thinking around what could happen in the future instead of, you know, always kind of playing catch up or just taking what's offered as well. Often that's kind of what happens in terms of shaping your career sometimes, I think.
And how old is your son? I probably should have asked.
Oh, yeah, no, I hadn't realised I haven't said that. He's 5, so he's okay. He's in reception.
Right, so that must have made a difference, him starting school, although obviously with
the... He's been at school, has he?
With the pandemic, yes.
Yeah, not really. I mean, I don't know about you two, because it's really interesting that we get a lot around, you know, artist heel mothers with small children, and there's kind of...
Yeah.
Like, I've definitely had provision for babysitters or childcare, but then there's this school age thing that happens where people sort of imagine your children are more sufficient or they need you less. But I'm not sure that's true till quite an older age. And actually, they have their own lives and routines which have to be respected as well. So there's other things coming in that are more difficult. Obviously, you know.
I think that family life, the kind of volume of it goes up higher and it absorbs more of your time. And then you have other things that shrivel away, like socialising. So I think perhaps that, you know, that you, I sometimes feel like I can have two things that work well: going to my studio, you know, doing my, you know, running my paid for work, and running my house, and, you know, and running my relationships with the people in my house. But I haven't been a very good friend, probably. You know, like sometimes you think, wow, it's ages since I've done that part of my life. Like go to the cinema, or, you know, just you just become a bit more constrained in what you seek out, and that means you probably go to less sort of private views and you know, networking, that kind of thing, I think.
Yeah, that was something I was going to ask about. Do you think that not being able to, or maybe you're just too exhausted to do all those kind of networking, private view things? Do you think not doing that is something that does negatively impact upon an art career?
It probably does. I don't know, because I'm not, you know, I think you can end up feeling a bit like a sort of hermit, you know, and it's sometimes that's a nice way where you reconnect with other artists. But if you always, you know, like your gallery, Kathy, was like a place where you felt like it was okay to be there with your children, you know, because it was an artist-run space. And it, you know, and it was fun to be there. But I've definitely been in other places where, I think once I remember taking my daughter to something at the Royal College, and she fell asleep in the car, and she woke up when she got there, and she made such a horrible noise that I could see people just like being repelled, like a subsonic wave, and they were just going backwards from me, like, oh, there's Catherine, but she's got that thing with her.
So that wasn't a positive.
And she was really horrible, and she sat in her car seat all the way home, and then we got to Harrods, we were driving back, and I went, you were really horrible, that was horrible, and she went, flags! Like, and now I'm going to say something nice. Like, flags. And I went, yeah, flags. Flags are nice. Thanks for the flag. Give me the flags. That's nice. I think that, and then I probably stopped bothering for a bit after that. Anyway, she's 19 now, so I probably could take her again.
And is she going to art school? Or is she...
She's at art school at the moment. Yeah, so she goes to St. Martin's.
Rubbed off somehow.
Yeah, and she's, you know, she's done that on the Zoom, and now she's going to Glasgow next year.
Exciting.
So she's gone. I've made one adult.
Well, the other person has decided to.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes. Your adults are back at home with you, aren't they?
They are. Yeah, the house is very full up at the moment.
Yeah.
I'm thinking back to when you were talking about Emily. When you were talking about when children get a bit older, or maybe Catherine mentioned it. Anyway, when children do start going to school, and you think, yeah, they're at school. The thing that I found so difficult was having to go and pick them up at 3 o'clock or whatever it is, because you're just getting started.
It's such a short day.
Just getting started on something, and it's so frustrating. So, yeah, there are things like that which I guess people don't really think about generally. And also I was thinking that when they're very little, sometimes they're more flexible, aren't they? I remember when my son was very little and I could kind of just take him places more easily. Yeah. But when they do start saying, I don't want to do this, and getting grumpy, then it does get very, very difficult. So Yeah, the whole, I think the whole networking, private view type thing, it does change. Maybe there's an alternative network that we build up of people who we actually like working with and who are more supportive. Maybe it's just a way of weeding out that.
I mean, I sometimes feel like that a lot of the problems are that artists haven't made models which are kind of trying to circumvent the capitalist art world. So you're always trying to fit into a kind of a capitalist model, you know, and which excludes women who have like more, I think. Well, I just feel like, remember once you told me, Kathy, that you were in a book about artist-run spaces and it was like a shockingly few number throughout the whole country?
Yeah.
Or an exhibition. And I remember thinking, why are we so dumb? You know what I mean? You did that amazing thing where you enabled lots of people by running your gallery as an artist-run space, and people came in and put on shows, and there was, you know, it was a great opportunity for lots of different people. And it enabled a lot of different voices. And I sometimes wonder why there aren't more of those.
I guess there's a very simple answer in that it's quite an expensive thing to do in terms, or you have to be lucky and find a space that somebody gives you. Then it also takes loads of time. So
I mean, it took a lot of your time, didn't it?
It did. Maybe I should just mention that I run a gallery called Transition Gallery, which I started running in 2003. But at the moment, we don't have a space. And obviously, in the last year, we haven't been able to do anything anyway. But the idea is that we'll do some off-site projects. But I mean, I guess part of the reason that I started doing that was in order to create my own thing where I could fit in with the way that my life was. So I didn't have to worry about looking the right way to go to kind of high profile private views or whatever, because I could just hold my own and try and create my own thing where I was at the head of it. My own control freakery way of doing things, which sort of, you know, had worked out, I guess, for a while, and has been a really, really good thing to do. And I also really do like putting artists together, like making group shows and just kind of putting unexpected people together and thinking, oh, I wonder what will happen if we show their work.
Yeah.
It's fun. So do you both, getting back to more direct child-related things, I've gone off topic a bit, do you both work from a studio? I think you mentioned you had a studio, Catherine.
It's a space studio.
I
forgot to say that.
Flag that up.
It's in the Percy Dalton Peanut Building.
Oh, lovely.
I've sublet it from a guy who had these things manufactured, which he hasn't ever shown, and they're like gigantic Indian drums, okay? And you have to... You go through the space and it's like a Terry Gilliam film. They're piled up in this Indian cardboard, which I actually like. It makes me feel cozy. And it's a narrow space at the back of that by the window. And sometimes people in the next door studio drill and they all fall down. And when I come in, I have to push them all back to get to my studio.
Oh my goodness.
And sometimes I have fantasies about, like, let's call her X, a successful woman painter that I know, whose daughter comes to her studio after school and they do painting together, and her daughter has her own section of the studio. And I imagine my daughter coming, hi, mummy, I'm coming from here, blah, 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 we're painting together. But at the same time, I can always pay for my studio with the work that I do. And so I never have to feel like I'm supporting my studio. It's always something that it's so cheap that it's not so cheap. It's cheap enough for me to keep it going. And I don't share it with anyone else, which is the most important
thing. Indian drums.
Apart from my drums, and they are, you know...
The
only trouble is, when there was an open studio, people come in and they would literally turn their back on my work and go like, what are these? What are these things? And I would go like, they're Indian drums, they're meant to be piled up into a thing, it's actually quite a nice artwork, but it's never been shown. And in the end, I ended up, someone said to me, like, what are these? And I went, I'm not talking about them anymore, okay? And the person was really sort of kindly and sort of went like, oh, I'm sorry. And I was like, I'm sorry, you're just like the 100th person
who
said,
what are these? That is the thing about open studios, though, isn't it? People always ask you about the thing you don't that you just forgot you'd left out, like, I don't know, some old bit of bric-a-brac or something.
They are quite, I mean, they are quite odd things, but there was an amazing one. There's a road called Beck Road nearby to here, and during the, they have a thing called Open Architecture Week in London where lots of buildings are opened up, and they opened up all of Beck Road, and they had they had a printout from the census of 1900 saying who used to live in the house, and that was on the door of all the different houses. And so lots of the spaces were short-term, they were going to be knocked down, something, so they were given to artists short-term, and they've all stayed there. So it started in the sort of 80s, I think. So lots of artists were living in the houses, and they showed... So nearly every house had a gallery or an exhibition in it, someone showing a film or a group show, and it was really brilliant. And then there's an artist called Mikey Cudahy, and she, the man who'd bought her house, he took everything out of his bedroom and he remade her studio as it had been when she lived there and brought up her son. And so she was in this empty room, and she said, it's so weird, I'm back here. And she'd brought lots of her work, and she said, I often dream that I'm in this room, and my, you know, because it's where I brought up my son, and he used to do his drawings on the floor there. And now it's real, and I really am back in here.
That
and it was
great.
Incredible.
I remember.
I don't know if you know her work.
I remember going to Maureen Paley's gallery when it was in Beck Road.
Yeah, that was in the same place, in a house. Yeah. It was in a similar house.
Back in ages ago. So, Emily, do you have a studio, or do you work from home, or how do you work?
Yeah, I'm in it.
You're in it now.
I've always worked in Liverpool, like, historically, so there's obviously a slightly cheaper rent, I imagine, than London. But, I've always been in artist-led buildings in the Royal Standard for a long time, but they were moving studios while I was quite heavily pregnant, and that was the point where I just left, because I couldn't imagine moving again. I've not had a studio for about 4.5 years, and then last autumn we put a shed. You know, it's a 12...
I can see. Yeah. I thought you were in a shed.
It's a home studio.
Yeah, sorry. I keep calling it the shed, and I keep getting told off by my husband. An insulated shed, which is 12 by 8 in the garden. So it's not really big enough to make things, but it's just, like, really precious real estate. And we kind of live in a house with one downstairs room, a little kitchen, and just one room. So, yeah, working on a dining table for a long time has just been... Yeah, just a bit bleak, really. So, yeah, there was a lot of... I'd love to say I saved what I would have spent on the studio during that time, but I didn't, so I'm just paying off the bank.
Yeah.
But, it was worth it.
Yeah. And, I think having that space, like you say, just that space to go to, because I know when my children were small, I did have a studio. For a while, I had a studio in the garden, and... Eventually, I got an outside studio, and it was just so brilliant to go out of the house and go somewhere else and have
a
little sleep sometimes, even in the afternoon.
Oh, I haven't done that yet.
I think it's a bit like I, even though my studio is disgusting, I used to feel like it was a sort of my cabin in the woods. You know, like you just go there, and I really enjoyed making it really disgusting sometimes as well. Like making it very dirty, because it felt like it's just my space to make into a pit if I want to.
I love that rebellion.
I don't know what's wrong with me, but that, you know, like I feel like that it just did feel like, I do feel like it is really important to be able to go somewhere where there isn't, you know, any other rules but your own. Yeah. I think.
What you did the... British School at Rome residency, didn't you, Emily?
Yeah,
was that before children?
Yeah, the year before
child.
Yeah.
Okay, because I know I'm just thinking about, you know, particular opportunities that there might be, residencies in particular, and how sometimes that is very difficult if you have children. Because I think at the BSR they actually, at the time when I was there, they didn't accept children. You couldn't bring children.
Yeah. There was quite a strictly word of policy, wasn't there?
Not been.
But you know, the new director is putting in a family suite, and
is that right?
Which I don't know where that's at or what's happening, but that's what I've heard from people who've been last year.
But
Yeah.
I mean, obviously that would be great, but also I really envied Kathy when she went, and she, I think your daughter was still at school.
Yes.
And I just remember thinking, like, Kathy's getting out.
I did feel...
I didn't mean that in a mean way to your children, no. But I just thought, like, it's your time, and I can't imagine sharing that, you know, thinking, like, they're waiting to have dinner with me.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know
what I mean?
It's true. Yeah. It's true. It was nice. Sorry, although family. She did come out for, like... a few days anyway,
right?
But I think she was doing her A-levels at the time. Maybe, yeah, I was she, even away when she was doing her A-levels.
I think she may have mentioned that to you. I just remember you saying that you were going to miss the big, and you said something. I think it's odd actually how often things that people tell me to do with childcare or their family really stay in my mind. Like, I remember you saying, and my daughter said, you're going to miss my A-levels. And I said, oh, I'm only missing just the end of them or something, just like a small part.
Which is not all of them.
You know.
No. I mean, I was there, you know, when she was doing all the work. So
yeah.
It was great to get away. I mean, I did actually have some other things that were going on at the time, which were a bit tricky. But overall, I think, yeah, to have that space to sort of go to a completely different place and to be able to be immersed in your work is kind of amazing.
It's funny because when Will was born, it was a horrendous birth, and actually looking back I realised I was in a bit of a state afterwards, but was sort of carrying on as you do. And when he was about 9 months old, I went to Texas for 2.5 weeks on my own.
Wow.
Which I planned to take him with me, and the childcare was all in place with the gallery, but he started crawling at 6 months, and I just thought I can't like cope with this baby who's really mobile. So there was this weird, you know, it's really funny to look back on that and think, how could I have done that? But it was sort of okay at the time, and I think had a lot of relatives in place, and you know, there was a little village here, and his dad, of course, was looking after him. But yeah, it kind of blows my mind to think that I did that now, because I wouldn't do that now. With a 5-year-old, I wouldn't leave him for that long. But yeah, I think looking back, I thought, well, yeah, I actually was a bit detached and a bit not very well, but. Yeah, just the thought of, there's a lot of guilt, isn't there, in leaving, but also being in Rome for 3 months, you know.
It's amazing.
It's bloody wonderful. So,
yeah, but I was just going to say, I think sometimes you feel guilty, sorry for interrupting.
That's all right.
But in fact, it sounds like he was having a nicer time, you know, like he stayed at home.
Oh, yeah.
Than travel and going somewhere strange.
No, can you imagine?
Strangers.
And it was so hot, you know, it's like, no, yeah. It would have been...
sort of greasy.
I think I knew it would have been awful to take
I
in.
Actually do have a terrible experience. I used to work as a makeup artist when I first had my son, and I got a job in South Africa. I think it was like 2 weeks, and I said, well, I can't do it because, you know, I've got to look after my son, and they were like, well, you can bring him, just bring him, it's fine, you know, there's plenty of places to stay, bring someone to look after him. We'll pay for their flight. So I did do that, and I brought my friend to look after him, but she couldn't get on the same flight as me on the way out, and it was packed, and he was just crawling, and oh my God, I'm just haunted by that flight. He was crawling up and down the aisles. He just wouldn't, he was a very fidgety baby. He would not sit still. It was just so awful. And yeah, the whole job was quite terrible. I didn't ever do that again.
Okay, maybe I made the right decision.
Yeah, you probably did.
Yeah.
Have you ever felt like you shouldn't mention that you've got children when you're, I don't know, applying for an art opportunity, just talking to important art people, trying to be more serious? Do you think it is something that, I don't know, casts you in a different light that isn't a serious artist? I guess this goes back to the pram in the hallway thing, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Have you had any experiences like that, either of you? No.
I don't know. I think it's like how you think about it. I don't feel like I never need to apologise for being a mum. You know what I mean? I don't, and I refuse to accept a kind of value system that wants me to apologise for that. And I think it's, I think quite often you have people where you see you know, like I like thinking about Susan Rothenberg and her daughter. They went once and she wasn't meant to live in the studio, but she wanted to leave her partner, and her daughter lived behind a little curtain, and they lived in the studio secretly. And I think you sort of, I kind of try and think about people like that who are kind of women artists and good mothers. But I think sometimes the spectre of the bad mother, you know, how people often love to point out. I remember someone telling me Louise Bourgeois was a horrible mother. I remember thinking, who'd bother saying that about Henry Moore? By the way, he was a horrible dad. You know, you just wouldn't.
Yeah.
So there's the two spectres, you know, the good mother and the bad mother, and there's no sort of in between. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing about caring opportunities, you know, caring duties and women being expected to take on more of them, I guess, is pertinent maybe to this.
Yeah.
In some ways. But I hadn't heard that about Louise Bourgeois. That's really
fascinating. Oh, no, I think that's just, I don't know, someone said that to me. I refuse to believe it. I think she's probably good.
She's probably just wasn't.
Yeah,
she probably just wasn't.
She's just a mum and a great artist, you know.
She probably had her own
maybe
weird,
she's sometimes a bit crabby.
Weird Louise Bourgeois ways of doing things, probably.
Yeah.
And good for her. Are there any particular galleries, apart from Transition Gallery, of course, that are particularly parent-child friendly? That you've, you know, anything that you've done? I'm guessing maybe it's a good point to introduce some of the projects that you have actually told me about that involve children. Catherine, you did Dream On, which was, I've got here, the result of a six-week photography project with a local primary school, which was exhibited at the V&A Museum of Childhood in 2018, 2019. So could you explain kind of how
so that was there's an amazing American woman photographer called Wendy Ewald, and she did a project where she lived in Appalachia for 2 years, and she ran a photography class at the local school. And she enabled a lot of the children there just to take photographs. And some of the photographs were visualizations of their own dreams. They followed their own kind of agenda. So we went into school and we got children to write down an actual dream that they'd had. And then with their classmates, they staged it as a dramatic scene. And it was all black and white photography. And it was all taken around the school. We brought them in props and things. And they used the school orchard. And it was really good. And it was like one of the things that I feel proudest of is that when on the night of the exhibition, all the children had a sticker that said photographer and they wrote their name on it so that everyone knew that they were part of the exhibition. And that was, with the two classes, 60 children had a big gallery show together. And then there's a big forecourt there and it was dark and they all went outside and chased each other. And I just thought, how great would that be if when you were in a group show at the end of the show, everyone went out in the dark and like screamed and chased each other around. I did used to think of like my own painting and work that I did with children as separate things. So one was for money and, you know, one was my art. But that when I did that, when I started doing that project, and I have done it in other schools, I actually thought we are collaborating together. And it was a great feeling. And I realised that I missed working with other people and that I value children artists as highly as other artists as well. So I used to think like, oh, should I say that I teach art to children? Wouldn't it be better if I said, you know, I teach art at an art school? But now I actually feel like that's another thing that I feel, maybe because I'm old, a wise old crone now, that I don't feel like I have to apologise anymore. But I actually feel like I'm as proud of that as of anything else that I've done.
That sounds amazing. It was that the show where they had blue lemonade at the private view?
No, that was an old one. That was the thing where I got artists to respond. That was at the V&A Museum of Child as well. Artists made artwork. They put something next to something in the collection that they liked.
Okay.
And all of the drinks and things, people were like, I feel sick. Why is everything like a sugary drink? And I was like, because it's for the children. And that was with the school as well. So the children came and did a workshop, and I invited them all to the private view because I think I'd seen like a picture of a Joseph Cornell exhibition where he had a special private view for children where he served like brownies and cherry coke. Mm. So I had like a I mean, now I wouldn't because you're not allowed to, but I think I had a special deal with a Haribo, sent me loads of stuff, and I had a lady with a Haribo, like a cigarette girl, and she was just giving out. All the children were very high, and they started to run around the gallery, and the security guards were chasing them. Stop! Yes, stop running!
That's what I remember. That was the one I was at. Okay. It was great.
But there was also some great work by serious artists, for even Cornelia Parker. She did. She put some dynamite in one of the dolls' houses, like a stick of dynamite.
Oh, that's cool. Really good. And so, yeah, Emily, you're doing this really interesting sounding project, which is My Kids Could Have Done That, where artists make work in collaboration with their children, curated by Will Cooper and his 5-year-old daughter, Astrid. Is that...
Yeah, that sounds amazing.
When is that going to be?
It's going to be in July, so it's at the Edinburgh. And I think, it's interesting what, Catherine, what you're saying about that kind of divide between, you know, how art gets divided in terms of what you do for money and what is real art, or, like, you know, however you want to talk about it. That's definitely something I've felt and seen. And I guess, I've had a couple of projects that have been amazing in terms of kids. So Marianne at the Blue Coat. But this is the first time I've worked with Wilbur on a project, and currently he wants to make a cardboard jail with sliding doors, life size. So we're in conversation. he's quite sure. I mean, he has the conviction of, a white middle-aged male artist. So
you're in conversation with him. Does he tell you what to do?
No, it is, like, it's a really nice reflection of, like, Will's idea sort of comes from how we've been working in lockdown, I guess, and the reality of, like, let's just talk about this and think about it in a different way rather than, kind of shoving it behind. It's going to be, it's going to be really interesting trying to let go of the art as well, so that it is an actual proper collaboration between us.
So is he the thinking up the concepts and you're realising them? Is that how this partnership is working at the moment?
No, I think we will realise them together. I suppose I'm trying not to impose anything on him at this point because I, anytime he suggests something, I immediately like extrapolating and thinking, oh, we could blah, 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 blah. And I'm just trying to just keep my mouth shut at the moment and see what comes out unfiltered.
That's so interesting. I did used to try, and when my kids were little, I sort of had an idea that I wanted everything I made in terms of my art to connect to what was going on in my life. So I did try and do lots of stuff with the children, but I don't think I really collaborated with them so much as using them as subjects. I used to get them to dress up in weird costumes, and a bit like your thing, I guess.
Sounds amazing.
Catherine, and then take pictures of them and make little films, and I remember getting into trouble at St. Martin's once because I made a film of Rose, my daughter, crying. Like, she was just had the most terrible tantrums, and I kind of edited all this footage together and played it in some kind of crit, and everybody was just really quiet afterwards. It was so scary. Nobody said anything,
But is that because it's unacceptable?
There was something unacceptable about it, and I never could exactly figure out. I guess they felt it was maybe like I'd done something horrible to her and she was crying or something like that, but it was just how she was, and I just kind of found it a bit fascinating because it was kind of like a public display, her crying. It was very theatrical. So I guess I wasn't really thinking about what the audience thought about what I was doing. I never shared it in public. I don't know if it still exists. It probably was a mistake, but it was kind of interesting. And maybe I went off on a slightly different track after that.
I mean, we do kind of, hurry our crying children away, don't we? It's not something that people get to sort of see.
It's sort of embarrassing, isn't it? It is embarrassing when they do that. Or, it's seen as being embarrassing and people are scared of it, I think. Like if you're in a public place and there's a child really screaming, you kind of went, oh dear, but not go too close.
Yeah, there's definitely fear involved, for sure.
It was interesting. So I know you've told me about these, your fantastic project that you're working on with your son, Emily. But I just want to ask, kind of end up really by asking you both, what you're actually working on right now, just to kind of bring us up to date. So maybe I'll start with Catherine. What are you doing right now?
Okay, at the moment, I felt like because of homeschool, I'm just painting at the moment, and I haven't got, I haven't really made a sort of, I'm just having some time where I'm just painting in my studio because I didn't really have any time that ran on. I had a couple of days, and then I swapped with Tim, and he had a couple of days. I had to do stuff like fractions, which I haven't done for a long time, which was very hard for me. Yeah. Very, very difficult. It was awful. And also there was just so much in-house work, you know, everyone was at home, so much food making, you know, which is the other part of it. It's like, once I read this Indian novel and this poor old mother, she cries out, oh, all this business of the filling of stomachs. And that's how I felt like every single time there was an extra thing that had to be, people had to eat in the middle of the day, you know. And so now I did a kind of very short series of paintings where I went for a walk. I was walking with my nephew at night, and I took a lot of pictures of people's windows from the outside, and I did a series of paintings of people, just like I called it, "You Were All in My Movie," because I felt like that was the only outside world that I was getting, was sort of stealing glimpses of people's lives going on. And I do actually spend quite a lot of time thinking about how people live. You know, I think I spend a lot of time looking at pictures of other artists' studios or their houses in a kind of weird, snoopy way. And I'd actually, if there was a TV show called Old Woman's House, where someone just walked around their house talking about each room of their house, I would watch it all the time. But so that's what I'm doing. I'm just doing some painting, and I haven't really made a plan recently.
I saw those paintings on Instagram, I guess. They were really great.
That's right, yeah.
I really like them.
Yeah, me too. I really like them.
So, Emily, you've actually already told us a bit, haven't you, about your Arts Council award. And so what are you sort of...
Well, that won't be starting till the summer, because before that I have a commission for Tate Liverpool, which I'm working on, which should have been, you know, up and away by now, but of course everything's delayed. So yeah, it's shifted from like quite a slow, thoughtful, collaborative, long project into something which is going to be shoved into the next 3 weeks.
So when does that open? Does it open with the gallery?
Well, it opens in September, but in about 3 or 4 weeks I'm doing a film shoot, which will be making the work for the show. So yeah, it's called Flatland, it's based on the novel. Flatland, but sort of flipping it in terms of how women are thought about or spoken
who's
about.
Who's Flatland written by?
It's Edwin A.A. Abbott, and it's like 18... Gosh, I should really nail the date down because I'm going to be talking about it, but it's like the 1890s, and it's... it's everyone is a geometrical shape, but women are the lowest, so they're just straight lines. It's very funny. It's mathematical, and it's kind of it's just very amusing take on patriarchal society, basically.
I saw your show at Tate St. Ives. I guess it must have been last summer. Would it have been on then? Yeah.
Yeah, it went on all year because it got stretched.
No, I loved it. Yeah. It was great. So will this be related to that, the new book?
I suppose it is in the way that all the work of kind of flows, but it is a new, it's a piece of work I've been trying to make for about 8 years. So they did an open call and I applied for it with this thing, which has been hanging around for eons. So I'll be really happy to make it, but it's going to be a very intense month, I think.
Can I just ask you, do you work with, I was looking at, I was trying to read a little bit before I came on this podcast. Do you work with community groups when you make your film? Is that
something sometimes. Yeah, it depends on the project. But yeah, lots of, school children, things like Morris sides, like Morris dances, or, you know, just depends on the situation. But yeah, quite often end up working with someone if it's a site-specific project who's local. For this, it's kind of dancers and people who are interested in moving, and a proper film crew, which is the first time I've, you know, worked with anyone on stuff like that. So it's a different level of production and quite intimidating, but exciting.
Oh, I think it sounds exciting.
I'm thinking that I need to plan a trip to Liverpool. I've kind of been thinking about it for a while, actually. I can't remember why now, but it's just been in my mind.
Is that on in September?
Yeah, so you have to do one for the biennial.
That sounds great.
Oh, the biennial's in the summer, isn't it?
I think it's, yeah, it's open now. But it's,
it
will obviously be opening properly when
I've only been once, but it is amazing. It is an amazing thing.
Yeah, I think that was when I was last there for a biennial. I don't know if it was the last one, but I managed to go on a press trip, and we got put up in a really nice hotel. It was so good. I think I kind of made a mistake inviting me, and I'm not on the list this time.
You've got a magazine.
Yeah, I've got a magazine. Maybe I didn't write about it. I think I did write a review. Anyway, well, thank you so much, both of you. That's been really fun. Oh, yeah, I know what I wanted to say. I read this really great thing. Thinking back to the pram in the hallway, I read something that Frank Cottrell Boyce said, who is a novelist, screenwriter, and father of seven, kind of in response.
Okay. And they homeschool.
Do they?
They homeschool.
Wow.
Yeah.
He said that the most commercially successful British writer, J.K. Rowling, and the most ferociously inventive British writer J.G. Ballard were both single parents, which I guess is good to consider. As was Edith Nesbit, who had five children, founded the Fabian Society, which was a precursor to the Labour Party, and still had time to write 60 novels. So I guess, you know, the space was there.
Can I just recommend something before we go? To prepare for this a bit, my sister lent me this book, and it's called Mother Reader, Essential Writings on Motherhood.
Yeah,
and I don't know if you've read it. It's by Moira Davey is the editor. And it's got things by Ursula K. Le Guin. It's got Alice Walker. And Alice Walker has made a sign above her desk in glitter. Kathy, I know you like glitter. And it just says that, and it has a list of things. I think it says something like the Brontes didn't go anywhere and died young. Jane Austen didn't have a room to write in. You've got your daughter, and she's amazing. You know, so I just think it's, you know, I really enjoyed some of the voices in that. It was very empowering.
Recommendation. To carry on, just to finish with Frank Cottrell Boyce. That sounds really good, and it's good to have that thing for people to read to follow on with. Frank Cottrell Boyce said, if you go back to Connolly's terrific book, you'll see that the pram is only one of the many enemies of promise. Others include a public school education, which is so emotionally overwhelming you can't move on, he reckons, and the worst one of all, success. Surely the greatest enemy of all, but nobody warns you about these. It's just the pram. So I think that's kind of nice.
Oh, that's brilliant.
To know. That you can be burdened by other things.
Yeah.
It's been really lovely to talk to you both. Thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me on. I've enjoyed thinking about it and meeting you, Emily. I think it's been good to spend time thinking about this, which normally I wouldn't. I'd just be doing it.
Thanks for having us,
Out of Space is a podcast series produced by Space, London's largest artist studios provider. To learn more about the artists taking part and for further resources, please visit the What's On section of Space's website at www.spacestudios.org.